This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Equity Minds!
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast that follows our journey of investing. Whether you're an absolute beginner or approaching Warren Buffett status, our aim is to help break down your barriers from beginning to dividend. My name is Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going?
I'm very good, Bryce. Really loving this ASX week. Up to our third episode. We're halfway through, learnt so much, and we've got some great episodes to close the week out with.
We do. We are back, partnership with the ASX Investor Day, which is a day designed to provide investors of all levels with practical tools and knowledge to help improve their investment strategy and build their investing confidence. Those in the Equity Mates community know full well that we've partnered with the ASX Investor Day in the past, and this time is no different. We've got a week of great content where you get the chance to hear from some of the best investors from around the country in their field of expertise. Ren, what can we expect this week?
So we've kicked off the week with Lauren Jackson from Fidelity talking about key megatrends driving global markets. Yesterday, we had Rachel White from Vanguard talking about the changing face of investing. Today, we're joined by Dania Zinarova from Wilson Asset Management, sharing some of her top investment insights from around the world. And then the rest of the week, tomorrow, we have Anthony Doyle from Firetrail also sharing some of his top investment insights from around the world. And then closing it out, as we always do, with a buy, hold and sell episode with Adam Dawes from Shaw and Partners. Five superstar investors with a big week.
What a week. And if you like what you hear from the experts this week, then you get the opportunity to see them in the flesh. You can join them at the ASX Investor Days around the country. Brisbane kicks off this weekend, 14th of May at the Sofitel. Melbourne is the 21st of May at the Grand Hyatt. And then closing out in Sydney on the 28th of May at the Hilton. Ren and I will be there in Sydney on the day, talking rubbish as we always do, roaming around, taking some videos and having a bit of fun. So if you want to come and have a chat to us as well as all the experts that will be there on the day, head to the ASX website to find out more information and register and grab your ticket for the ASX Investor Day. But without further ado, it is our absolute pleasure to welcome Dania Zinarova to the studio. Dania, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So Dania is a portfolio manager for Wilson Asset Management's Alternative Assets Fund. The ticker is WMA, listed on the ASX. And we're going to be chatting all things alternative assets today. So Ren, let's kick it off.
Yeah, Dania, well, let's start at the very beginning. Alternative assets, people may not be familiar with that term. So what is an alternative asset?
Alternative assets can be a very broad definition, and you would find that investors across different geographies might include different asset classes when talking about alternatives. For us, for WMA's portfolio, in alternatives, we include investments in assets that are tangible. And those tangible characteristics, they define the value of the assets. We include asset classes such as private equity, infrastructure, real estate, real assets that would include agriculture, water rights, and other more niche asset classes. The key objective is really to look at the risk premium and see what are the risk premiums from just equity risk premium we can get from those asset classes, because one of the key benefits of investing in alternatives is diversification.
So you mentioned there real assets, private equity, real estate, cash. Let's chat about real assets, which make up 40% of the WAM alternative asset portfolio, the majority of which is in water rights.
Yeah.
What are water rights and why are they such a big portion of the portfolio?
Water rights is a pretty unique asset class to Australian investors. So if we take a step back and look at the global markets, there are probably two key markets for investors to consider when think about water rights, US and Australia. And Australia is considered to be a very well-regulated, sophisticated, developed market. It's been maturing over years. It has good level of liquidity. Water rights are entitlements that give their holders the right to a consumptive use of water derived from different sources. In Australia, there are over 140 different water sources. One of the key ones when you talk to water rights investors are the water sources attached to Murray-Darling Basin in Australia. Water rights are transferable. It's a liquid asset class. So it's easier to access for the broader investor base, not only institutional, but also retail. It's an asset class that has very strong diversification benefits for any investment portfolio because it has negative correlation to most traditional asset classes and even to some real assets, alternative asset classes. There are other characteristics such as quite attractive risk-return profile. So when we think about water rights investments, we are thinking about capital appreciation, basically the value of the water allocation itself and how this value appreciates over time. And it's been appreciating over a decade and longer. And the income component. So in other words, you as an owner of the water allocation would go and lease this water entitlement to a person who needs to use the water to irrigate their permanent crops or for other purposes, basically mainly in agriculture. So historically, when we look, let's say, take a period of 2012 until 2018, water rights delivered stellar returns to investors. There are questions, why is it happening? What influences the returns in the water rights? And a lot of this is, of course, correlated to climate and weather conditions. So we now have been for over 2 years in what we call La Niña cycle. And we saw increased amount of rainfall. It does affect the water entitlements pricing. So the more water is available, the more it affects negatively the price of the entitlement. On the other hand, all this rainfall led to crop producers really benefiting from this. And many of them started growing their arable land, growing crop production. So the ones who are preparing for the future, they started buying more water allocations, which leads to increasing value of the water allocation. So when we think about the portfolio construction in water rights, it's really important to think about balancing the portfolio between the crop growers. So let's say annual crop growers, they rely on seasonal rainfall. So for them, the current rainfall is great, unless it's a flooding event. For the permanent crop growers, when we talk about almonds or citrus orchards, they need water throughout the year. They can't rely just on seasonal rain. So by having a portfolio diversified by crop users, we can also think about having longer leases attached to the permanent crop growers and being less dependent on the weather conditions when we think about the returns within the portfolio.
Dania, people often ask, what role does active management play in a portfolio? I think I'm just going to clip that answer and give it to them because I can pretty confidently say that level of expertise on water rights is something that I'll never have. So I'm glad that you're doing the work there.
Thank you.
But so water rights is the lion's share of the real assets in your alternative assets fund, but there are some other real assets there. Can you talk about what are the other real assets? And if you have an explanation similar to water rights where you can share some of your insight, that would be great.
Look, the water rights is quite a significant part of the portfolio, and it will be rebalanced down the line because as a portfolio manager, I do want to see more diversification when I look at the income returns, when I look at the growth opportunities. Before I go into what's in the portfolio, I just wanted to say that when I think about portfolio construction, I think about this in a very holistic way. So I have a very broad mandate, alternative asset classes. It's a huge opportunity set. I don't set strategic asset allocation targets and say, okay, 25% of the portfolio needs to be invested in private equity, 30% in infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. I think about this as a total portfolio construction approach where my decisions are driven mainly by macroeconomic fundamentals and the long-term megatrends. In other words, when I think about investing in something like infrastructure, this is a very illiquid investment. And you as an investor would be locked in for 10, 15 years, sometimes longer. In other words, I need to have a very long-term view on what are there any strong tailwinds? What are those strong tailwinds? What are the macro fundamentals? So WMA follows those four megatrends. One is digitalization. Another is climate change. Third one is growing aging population, and finally increasing demand for food. And within those megatrends, I'm looking at private equity, real estate, infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. The rest of the portfolio outside water rights is invested in private equity, which includes venture capital, private equity growth, mid-market buyout. We have infrastructure, we committed capital to infrastructure, and this capital will be deployed this year. So we will get exposure to a well-diversified portfolio of infrastructure assets in Australia that would include transport, renewable energy, some digital infrastructure and other sectors. We have real estate. Within real estate, there are also different strategies in different sectors, for example, industrial, healthcare, commercial property, and they would be all slightly different risk return profile. Some of them mature assets, some of them with development potential. Within real assets, we also have exposure to agriculture, and this includes a variety of assets such as apple orchards, or apple storage and packaging facility, grain milling facility. We have vineyard, we have citrus orchard. So pretty well diversified by crop, well diversified in terms of where the asset is in the supply chain, and also by geography within Australia.
Well, Dania, you mentioned private equity there. So let's turn our attention to that. The next largest portion in the portfolio is the private equity portion, about 26%. So just like we asked why water rights, why is private equity such an important part of the portfolio?
Look, private equity is to some extent very similar to public equity, i.e. when we look at the investment returns, the key risk premium is equity risk premium that drives the return. But once we start looking deeper, we look at other benefits like illiquidity premium. So the fact that we as investors invest in illiquid assets or in businesses that will need 5 to 7 years before we can realize the value means that as an investor, you can expect the premium versus when you invest in public equities. Within private equity, we can also achieve some diversification benefits in terms of getting access to businesses or sectors that wouldn't otherwise be available on public equity markets. And we saw in the past that some of the companies like Uber and Spotify, initially, they didn't go to IPO. They didn't do IPO. They raised all the capital from private sources. And so if you are predominantly public equity investor, you will be missing on those exciting growth opportunities. And private equity is an asset class that also would be less volatile than public equity. So when we look at the equity markets now, you know, I talk to my colleagues and they wake up in the morning, they look at the market, they get so stressed, what's happening? I come to the office, you know, I start my day with reading some research papers. I don't stress about the market volatility because valuations hardly change year to year in private equity. Independent external valuations are done on the assets most of the time only annually. So as investor, you take a long-term view. You don't see the daily volatility, daily change in the value. So for the investment portfolio, it's definitely beneficial to have this type of diversification.
So one thing Bryce and I often talk about when we talk about private equity is just the amount of money flooding into the space. I think, you know, it's multi-trillions of dollars in the last few years have been reallocated to the space. And we often wonder, when does it get too crowded? Because if a fund is giving a private equity player that money, they expect that money to be deployed. How do you think about that dynamic of the opportunity set in private equity and the amount of money chasing it?
You're absolutely right. Look, I think some of the figures that I saw over the past few years, we accumulated about $14 billion in dry powder. In other words, like the capital that is ready to be deployed. And that comes from private equity and venture capital, because venture capital in Australia is now booming as well, with some people saying we are like the next Silicon Valley. The history is that pre-GFC, Australian market had about 30 to 45 private equity players. Post-GFC, when we look over the period of 2008 to, let's say, 2018, there were about 10 private equity players who would predominantly serve Asian institutional investors. Wholesale or retail investors in Australia had big challenges to access those asset classes. In fact, even some institutional investors in Australia couldn't access them because the capacity was limited. Now, the market itself, when we look at the opportunity set, how much capital we can invest, can easily absorb $15 billion or more over the period of 12 to 24 months. Because Australia, an Australian economy, and when we look at the GDP, there is a significant portion of GDP driven by small to mid-size businesses. And this is often where private equity operates in the space when we think about private equity growth or venture capital. There needs to be a bit more analysis rather than just saying there is a lot of capital chasing private equity. It is true, but the market is also evolving with more private equity players coming, creating more competition, healthy competition. The market or the valuations in the private equity in Australia, they are within their historical levels. So I don't see that the market is really overvalued. And in terms of the different types of strategies, investors can also choose. And that means the capital will not be deployed all into one strategy, but will be spread. So You can look at venture. We talked about this. You can look at private equity growth. You can look at mid-market buyout, large market buyout. We can look at special situations, turnaround transformation strategies. The opportunity set is there, and I am really glad that there are more names coming to the market. There are structural changes, generational shifts happening within private equity industry. It's a really exciting asset class to be in Australia right now.
We keep hearing that from a lot of experts, but it's like, damn, we can't get in.
Yeah. well, we can get in through funds like this.
So, Dania, with the big players now pretty active here in Australia, Blackstone, KKR, Carlyle, etc., how do the smaller PE players, the Australian firms, how do they actually really pitch themselves to be competitive in this space?
Yeah, they don't compete. They don't compete because the likes of KKR and Blackstone and others, they operate in a very different space. They would operate at the larger end of the market because there just won't be enough capacity if they start considering mid-market.
Yeah.
They would be doing 1-2 deals per year because in the Australian market, it's not like the US, it's not like Asia. There are just not enough deals for them to be very active. Many of them actually did have teams on the ground in the past, but over time, it kind of, relocated more to Hong Kong, Singapore, and they would do fly-in, fly-out, larger deals in the Australian market. From the local private equity players' perspective, who would be their main competitors now, like outside the local market? It might be that some of the mid-market buyout global fund manager would come and have a look at the Australian market from time to time. But really, they are not facing that much pressure from international players like the US or European market.
So you mentioned a few different, categories of private equity there. And one that is probably the sexiest part of that is venture capital. Like everyone wants to be a venture capitalist or be a startup that's funded by a venture capital firm these days. How do you, when you look at the Australian venture capital market, what are you seeing? It feels like there's, again, a lot of money in the system, but from your vantage point, how does it look?
There is a lot of money. It's a good comment. It is relative though, right? Like a lot of money relative to what?
Yeah,
like if we compare it to the US market, it's a drop in the ocean. If we compare it to 10 years ago, it's a huge growth for the Australian market. And it's very exciting because obviously venture capital investors, they are very important in terms of supporting local entrepreneurs, supporting local businesses and growing them. Venture capital is not for everyone when we think about investors. You would need to think about your tolerance of risk. And you would need to think about your overall return objective and what type of risk-adjusted returns you expect to get from the asset class in 5 to 10 years. Because when we look at a typical venture capital portfolio, we would see 10-plus businesses, ideally more than 10, 20 or more. And it's very skewed in terms of the losers and winners. It's typical to have 70% of your portfolio as losers and then 20 to 30 as winners. Mm. So, you have to have like strong nerves to invest in this asset class. But it does have very strong return potential. You would expect to receive excess return over equity markets. What is important to understand, though, we had we've seen pretty strong returns from venture capital also because the equity market has been so strong, because IPO is one of the key exit strategy for venture capital investors. So there is heavy reliance on how the equity market going.
I think we've seen that recently. I think Instacart cut their own valuation as they're preparing for an IPO. I think, Bryce, you were saying that one of Canva's big investors cut their holding value of Canva.
Yeah.
So we are starting to see that the weakness in equity markets flow through.
They should have IPO'd last year.
It's always so easy to say in hindsight.
So, Dania, before we turn to have a chat about the other assets that make up the portfolio, we're just going to take a very short break to hear from our sponsors.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
We've spoken about real assets. We've spoken about private equity. So the remaining assets that make up your portfolio, real estate and cash. Real estate is about 6%, cash 27%. Let's start with real estate. What are you interested in this space? How are you seeing it at the moment?
Real estate has been one of the key asset classes for Australian investors. Honestly, you'd look at any portfolio.
It's all right. I was going to make a stupid joke. But carry on.
It's interesting because real estate, we don't just talk about office sector, industrial, retail. You also think about hospitality, student housing, healthcare. You think about logistics. You think about residential, aged care. Like it's on its own, it's such a fascinating asset class. And again, within that asset class, as an investor, you may want to consider, do I want to take on additional risk because I need excess returns, or am I just interested in an income return? If it's income return and some diversification benefits, inflation hedge, which is natural inflation hedge within real estate, then you would be considering core real estate strategy. So we are talking about mature, established office buildings or prime regional shopping centers or high-quality logistics, assets that Goodman develops. These are the assets that you would invest in, and you lease to the tenants. Most of the time, leases would be linked to CPI on the annual basis, and you would be getting those fairly stable income returns over time, potentially some capital appreciation as the cap rate compresses over time. Fairly, low risk, moderate return strategy. Now, the strategies that are more opportunistic are the ones where you take on development risk or some operational risk. Currently in Australia, if we look at the core real estate, it's really tricky to make a call because office as a sector still goes through transformational changes. I mean, you guys rent your office space. Yeah. Some office assets in Sydney, they're struggling to attract new tenants because we see high quality new assets coming to the market like Key Towers or Barangaroo and others. And the incentives are getting to the historically high level at about 40% for the tenants, which to me, these are all the signs this sector might be experiencing some challenges at the moment. So long term, probably not a great idea to go in now. Retail is a, you know, is a new story. We'll probably can make a separate episode on retail because once the U.S. retail about 4 or 5 years ago started experiencing challenges, I started asking property managers here, and everyone was in absolute denial that we are not going to be impacted by online retail. Mm. And then COVID hits, and all this accelerates, all those trends, and now online retail is at the center of attention for retail sector. The most interesting now, I'm going to cut myself short, the most interesting now is the last mile logistics. Mm. And that's because, you know, there needs to be more assets to serve online retailers. So newer distribution centers that are flexible, that are closer to urban centers, because more traditional industrial assets that tend to be next to the airports or ports, and it just doesn't work for online retailers. Mm-hmm. So that's a really interesting sector to be. Something like healthcare real estate, amazing, because we are talking about increasing demand for healthcare services. So investing in healthcare real estate is a very good way to place this theme over the long term. It's a very good way to get a more stable income compared to other sectors like office or retail. Most of the time, leases would be triple net leases. They would have fixed annual increases. For good assets, you'd have tenants like Ramsey and Healthy, so good quality tenants as well.
I want to go to residential real estate because so many people in the Equity Mates community ask why there isn't a residential real estate ETF listed on the ASX. And I actually don't have a good answer, but my response is always, do you want more buying pressure in the residential market?
Yeah.
But I have read that recently in the US, some of the private equity players are getting into residential. Do you expect Australia to follow suit? Do you expect Australian PE players to start buying residential as well?
Yeah, I've been expecting this for the last 5 years. Okay. I think. In fact, there were some large US players. By the way, US market is very mature in that space. The concept of multi-housing is very familiar concept for the US investors. For Australian investors, it's a much newer concept. Some of them, they did come to Australia and started establishing teams about 5 years ago, but then they just saw they would need institutional backing in terms of the volume of capital in order to launch their strategies. And institutional investors here, they were not there yet in terms of including it into their portfolio. I think there are also, you know, deeper reasons why it is not happening in terms of the investment in this sector, because so many Australians, like, it's a very similar market to Germany, where so many people, they want to own. Mm. They want to own. So individually, when you think about yourself as an investor, right, you're a private investor and you think where to invest next, you might already have your mortgage.
I wish.
Why? Okay, you will have mortgage. Why would you want to invest additional capital in residential? Yeah. You are already exposed to this sector.
And given the size of mortgages these days, it's going to be the lion's share of your portfolio.
Yes, but look, I do think this sector will have a place. You know, maybe we are talking about something like 3 to 5 years time.
Yeah, okay.
When we can sit down again and say, okay, what's happening in this sector?
Yeah. Mm. Well, hopefully they wait and don't add any more buyers to the market, at least until Bryce and I are in the property market.
Yeah, it's a catch-22, isn't it? Because having access to an ETF now, you're just seeing all the headlines of what could have been if we'd own a house. But
yeah, getting access to that price
movement. But then also, yeah, you don't want more people in there splashing cash around.
Yeah.
So, Dania, let's turn to the cash component. 27% cash holding, inflation on a tear, interest rates about to rise. It feels like a pretty big percentage. Does this indicate that you're bearish in the short term and you're keeping some dry powder on the sidelines to take advantage of what might be coming? Or is there another reason that you're holding 27% cash?
There is another reason I'm holding nice. This level of cash. Within our portfolio, first of all, the portfolio had, when we started managing the portfolio had about 25% of cash. I started making new commitments, taking into account that level of cash. When we look at the structure of the portfolio, it's structured as listed investment company. So it's a closed pool of capital, perpetual pool of capital. And I look at the cash flows in and out over longer periods of time. So most of the illiquid investments in the portfolio, they were made in 2016-17, what they call vintage year, which means from last year, 2021, 2022, 2023, I expect all those investments will be exited and the capital will be coming back. At the same time, I started making last year new commitments to new investments. So we committed capital to healthcare, real estate, infrastructure strategy, mid-market buyout, last mile logistics. There will be more strategies coming. But when we talk about investing in alternative asset class, it doesn't mean that you commit the capital and from day one, this capital is fully deployed.
Right.
Yeah. You as an investor have to be patient, waiting for your investment partner to gradually deploy this capital into new investments.
Gotcha.
And you don't want this actually to happen in one go. Yeah. You want it to be a very disciplined and, you know, patient approach. So WMA portfolio is currently going through what we refer to revitalizing its portfolio, rebalancing its portfolio, exiting 2016-17 vintage year, reinvesting the capital into new investment opportunities. Over this period, the level of cash would be slightly going up and down, up and down. So this will be, I expect, for the next 12 to 18, maybe 24 months. And what I'm looking at as options to potentially help with this uncertainty in the timing in terms of the exits and new commitments is to have some new asset classes such as private debt who have more liquidity. They don't have lock-in for 5 to 7 years. At the same time, these are yielding investment opportunities and potentially having this investment also as a treasury tool to manage this high level of cash. So I'm looking at different options, how to manage it. It is not my intention to hold that high level of cash within the portfolio over long term.
Makes sense.
It's a fascinating challenge. You know, yeah. We often speak to public market investors about portfolio construction, and that conversation is really about portfolio weighting.
Yeah.
But you have a whole other dynamic, which is portfolio timing,
yeah.
which...
Mm.
I guess Bryce and I don't really have to think about because we don't have access to your opportunity set. But
yeah.
It sounds like a real challenge. And I imagine there are moments where, you know, you start to, like when the timing doesn't work and you have to not swing at certain pitches because you don't have the cash or you don't have the liquidity there.
Yes, and that's, you know, that's why I don't see it as a portfolio where we'll look in 5 years' time and there would be like 5% of cash.
Mm.
Because that's exactly the point. Those opportunities, they come sporadically, mm. right? Tomorrow, someone might call me and say, look, we are launching this, so there is this deal available, and it would turn out a stellar deal, and I don't want to miss this
yeah,
opportunity.
Yeah.
So it's always wise in this type of portfolios to have some level of cash. When you look at some other similar portfolios that, you know, institutional investors manage, they would often use what they call a proxy within their portfolio. So instead of just having it in cash, they would, for example, invest in global listed infrastructure, global listed real estate, and use it as a proxy.
Okay.
For the unlisted, and then gradually deploy from that allocation into unlisted.
Mm.
So different approaches are available.
Mm. Okay, that's fascinating.
Absolutely fascinating. Unfortunately, we are almost at the end of our interview, Dania, but as Ren said, fascinating. I think we could have kept talking about this for another 45 minutes. And the good news is you will be talking about it more at the ASX Investor Day. So if you've enjoyed our conversation with Dania today, you can see her at the ASX Investor Day in Brisbane on the 14th of May, in Melbourne on the 21st of May, and then Sydney on the 28th of May. So head to the ASX website to grab your tickets and come along to listen to more of this fascinating conversation. But we do finish our interviews with three final questions that we ask everyone. They're not scary or hairy. Ren, do you want to close it out?
Yeah, so the first question we like to ask, do you have any books that you consider must read?
Look, I would say Ray Dalio's Principles is a must read. Yeah, definitely.
Good book.
Good book.
Great investor. Yeah. This second question, forget valuation or, you know, is it a good investment today or has it ever been a good investment, but just purely on company fundamentals, what's the best company you've ever come across?
Dangerous question to ask me because I'll get into this again. So there is one company, or I would say one business that really fascinates me, and in particular the strategy they run and manage. It's the fund manager is called Equilibrium. They're based in the US, and one of their strategies is called Controlled Environment Food Fund. They would invest in industrial scale greenhouses, and we're talking about, you know, the size of 23 or more acres of land. They will ensure that a greenhouse is fully sustainable by using only renewable energy, by recycling the water, no use of fertilizers, much better labor conditions by raising the beds, phenomenal technology usage. And once it's ready, they would lease it to an operator without taking on operational risk, and basically grow their portfolio across various crops, across various geographies. This has been very popular in Europe. US market was really behind on that front. And that particular fund manager, they've been really successful implementing the strategy, growing the market, helping the market really develop and get up to speed. What does it mean when we talk about sustainable agriculture? But at the same time, if you think about Australian market, weather conditions are the main challenges for the agriculture sector here, right? Weather is so volatile. We have bushfires, we have flooding, we use lots of pesticides, we use lots of fertilizers. Now, if this model can be implemented successfully in Australia, I really think it can be a breakthrough and complete turnaround for the agriculture industry here. So I just really, you know, when I think about what stories that you think are really success stories, I think that's just such a fascinating story because, you know, climate change is really important for investors in alternative asset classes, right? We invest for a long-term period. We want to ensure when it's time to exit those assets, they still have value and they made positive impact on the communities, on the society, on the environment. Mm. And this strategy just, you know, ticks all the boxes for me.
Yeah. I love that. I love this question because we always hear about like new companies or new funds that we haven't heard about before. And this is a great example of that. It reminds me, so I used to be at Coles before we were doing this full time. And Sundrop Farms down in South Australia is a company doing something similar. They took non-arable land, just land that they couldn't grow anything on, and similar, built greenhouses, all solar panel, built their own desalination plant to use salt water. Yeah. And Coles was just like over the moon with it. It was our best story. It was on all of our marketing material. It was everywhere. Yeah. But it's a really cool story, and hopefully we see more of it.
I hope so.
And so final question, we want to say a massive thank you, first of all, for sharing your insight with us today.
You're welcome.
It's been a really great conversation. Mm-hmm. If you think back to your early days in finance, starting out, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh gosh, it's so funny. We always talk about this in the tea. Like, that's the toughest question. You know, I would just say be fearless. Like, everything works out eventually in life. You know, take on risk, learn new things, learn new sectors, worry less, and yeah, just be fearless.
Love that.
Nice. Yeah. One of our values here at Equity Mates, be fearless. So well, great way to close out the interview, Dania. As we said, truly fascinating interview. I think we would have loved to have kept talking, but we're looking forward to seeing you in Sydney at the ASX Investor Day. And thank you so much for sharing your time today. It's been a truly inspiring conversation that I know a lot of our audience would have enjoyed. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Equity Mates Investing Podcast is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.